and now Evangelist David Shannon.
We'll open your Bibles to John, the 19th chapter. The song we sung before was very appropriate, more about Jesus. Past several months, we've been learning more about Jesus from the book of John. Today we learn a very powerful lesson about Jesus. It's one of endurance. And it's one, the more we really try to learn, the more we're going to love Jesus. There's no way to study John, the 19th chapter, without developing a greater love for Jesus. As we read the 19th chapter, we see that Jesus is the one that they chose to make a mockery of. We see that He's the one they chose to take thorns. Now, not just little briars, but they took a crown of thorns. And I doubt seriously they very carefully placed them upon His brow, but I'm sure that there must have been blood trickling down. They chose to smite Him, hit Him with their fists and with their hands. They chose to spit upon Him. They chose to lead Him out in front of the mob there with the purple robe. And He delivered Him as, "Behold the man." And they cried out, "Crucify Him, crucify Him." We also read where He was hanging on the cross. And He looks down and He sees His mother. And over to the side, the soldiers are parting His garments, treating Him with no respect whatsoever. Then also we see that as He was hanging on Calvary, that they came by to break His legs. You see, they wanted to make sure that they kept the Sabbath holy. And so in order that the Sabbath would be a day that they had to do no work, they needed to speed up the death process. And so very oftentimes the way they sped up the death of a crucifixion is that they broke the person's legs. You see, that would suffocate them. Because during the crucifixion, the only way a man could breathe was to pull himself up. And when he pulled himself up, his lungs could expand and he could breathe. And then when he relaxed, it pulled his lungs too tightly and his chest was in too much of a strain to breathe. And so he would have to pull himself up again to breathe and let himself down. And this would go on for hours and hours. So to encourage the death, they would break the legs so that the one could no longer raise himself up. And then very quickly they would suffocate. They came around to do that to Jesus, but yet He had already died. He had already said, "It is finished." And then we read something that seems so very strange. Something that we'll never know the complete impact of it this side of eternity. But for some reason it was secret disciples that came to bury Him. Read with me, if you will, beginning at verse 38. And keep in mind all the things that have happened. And now we read John 19, verse 38. And after this, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, but secretly, for fear of the Jews, besought Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus. And Pilate gave him leave. He came therefore and took the body of Jesus. And there came also Nicodemus, which at the first came to Jesus by night and brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100 pound weight. Then took they the body of Jesus and wound it in the linen cloth with the spices, as the manner of the Jews is to bury. Now in the place where He was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden a new sepulchre, wherein was never man yet laid. There laid they Jesus, therefore, because of the Jews' preparation day, for the sepulchre was nigh at hand. It seems that the last of the terribleness of this day is that it took secret disciples to bury Jesus. Let me ask you a question. Where was His followers? Where were the ones that followed after Him day in and day out? Where were the ones that followed Him so closely that Jesus told them where to sleep and where to work during the day and how to gather food and how to teach men and how to bring men into the kingdom of heaven? Day in and day out they've been with Him, and now it's time that He's crucified and He needs to be buried. Where are His followers? Where is His family? Why would secret disciples be the one to come forward. Here we see that these secret disciples were Joseph and Nicodemus. Now we read about Joseph and more in Luke, the 23rd chapter. It tells that he was a councilman. And he was one that would not go along with the death of Jesus. But yet, here in John, it tells us that still he was a private or a secret disciple. We know about Nicodemus. He was the one that he was so curious to learn more about the truth that he was afraid to come in John, the 3rd chapter, in the daytime and to hear Jesus because he didn't want to ruin his Jewish reputation. So he chose to come to Jesus by night, and Jesus told him what he must do to be saved. Now all of this time, apparently, from that time in John, the 3rd chapter, until now, he has been a secret disciple. And it's now that we read about him finally doing something that is close to being open. How can this be? What kept them being secret disciples? What kept the ones that were open disciples away? First, let's remember that Jesus can never be pleased with a secret disciple. Jesus can never be totally pleased with someone who is not willing to stand up for Him. Why do you think they remained secret for so long? Again, something we probably will never know this side of eternity, but we can assume a few things or make a guess in the dark. One thing that many do, even in this day and time, that very possibly they did, that is maybe they thought their reason for being secret was honorable. You see, it's a very good possibility that Nicodemus and Joseph both were men of high Jewish regard, and so they thought for some reason they were able to weigh out in their mind, well, since I am in this position, Jesus will understand. And at least I'm not against Him. At least I'm not out there crying, crucify Him, crucify Him. I do believe what He's saying, but I must protect my reputation. And so maybe they had within their mind some way of thinking that they were honorable. Brethren, let us learn and let us know this morning that the only way to be honorable in the sight of God is to stand up for Christ and to not be ashamed of the gospel of Christ, because it's the power of God unto salvation. Also, we could look at another assumption that very well could be the case as well. Maybe they were simply cowards. Maybe they were afraid. And maybe they knew all of this time that they should be doing better. And maybe they knew that what they were doing was completely wrong. And they would see the other Christians that were standing up, and every time they saw a Christian that was faithful, it just tore their heart open because they knew the truth. And finally, when Jesus died on the cross, that was more than what they could bear. And so they went. And maybe this was a way of their repentance, of letting people know that they truly were followers of Jesus Christ. We really do not know exactly why they came forth at this time and why they had been in secret for such a long time. But this morning, you know your heart. And you must answer to your God. Is there anywhere in your life right now that you're a secret disciple? Is there anywhere that you can think of in your mind where you say, well, when I go to this one particular place, it may be on a daily basis, or it may even be on a monthly basis, or even just once a year, and you might say, whenever I go to this place, no one would ever guess that I'm a Christian. I don't really try to stand up for Christ. It's not that I yell out, crucify Him, and it's not that I act just really worldly. It's just that I don't stand up for Christ at this particular place. You know, there's many that go on vacation, and they do that. They leave Jesus behind. Is there anywhere in your life that you, if you're honest with yourself, will have to admit that you're a secret disciple? This morning, let us learn that there is never a place in the church, in the kingdom of heaven, for a secret disciple. Let us not wait till we see some terrible thing like the crucifixion to bring us out into the open for Jesus. Let us read about the crucifixion. Let us read about the love that God has for us. And let that bring us out to obey the truth. Also, as we study this, we can't help but to think back to John, the 12th chapter. Do you remember in John, the 12th chapter, when Mary came to Jesus? What did she do? You remember, in a sense, she prepared Him for His burial. She took that very costly ointment. That others thought was unwise because she was wasting it. And she put it on Jesus to show respect to Him. And the others sitting around, they ridiculed her and they said she wasted her money. And Jesus praised her for what she did. Now let's think for a moment. She did something for Jesus there that Jesus appreciated. He was still alive. He was able to say thank you. Nicodemus and Joseph here, they did really that very same thing. They even did more than that. They went and they took Him off of that cross. And they took His mangled body and they wrapped it and they cared for Him. And then they put that ointment on. But really, wasn't it too late for Jesus to say thank you? Wasn't it a little bit late to show the respect to Him? Really, they'd been secret disciples all along. This morning, how do you show respect to others and to God? Now I want you to listen closely and not misunderstand what I'm saying. I believe in the way we show respect to the dead is fine. And I think we as Christians should do it. But isn't it a little strange that many times, the only times we send flowers are after death? And isn't it strange that we'll go down and we'll spend a few hours in a funeral home one evening, and the very next day we'll go back for a few hours again, and we'll even drive out to the cemetery? Now that's acceptable and that's good and that's great. But if that is following a period of time that we've done nothing for that person before they died, how good is it? Brethren, if you're only going to do it one time or the other for me, I'd rather you do it for me while I'm alive. Forget my funeral. Take care of me while I'm alive. If I'm laying in the hospital, come visit me while I'm alive. Send me flowers while I'm alive. And if you're only going to do it once, forget me on my funeral day. I won't care. You see, so often, we get our priorities out of order. And that's what happened here to Nicodemus and to Joseph. That's what happened even somewhat to His faithful disciples. Mary was coming to Jesus and she was showing such great respect and love for Him while He was alive, and the others sitting around that had followed Jesus day in and day out ridiculed her. And then in the very end, Nicodemus and Joseph finally step forward and do something good. But in a sense, it's too late. Let us always remember to keep our priorities in order, and especially when we're serving God. Many times we live as if we're going to have a time after death and before judgment to straighten things out. Brethren, there is no time after death and before judgment for us to change the condition of our soul. Let us realize that whatever I'm going to do to serve God, I must do now, while I'm alive, because that time comes when no man can do any more for his own soul. Let us also learn from this that there are many today that are still in the closets. There are many today that are still in the same situation as poor old Nicodemus and as Joseph. Even though they saw Jesus in such a mangled shape. And let's point out here also that it's very possible that maybe the reason that his close friends did not come to take him off the cross and maybe his family members did not come was because of the way he looked physically. It may have been just too much on them. It may have been that they truly were afraid that there were others still waiting to persecute more Christians. But when we read this chapter and we read the other chapters that describe the persecution and the crucifixion, truly Jesus must have been covered from head all the way to his feet in blood. Truly the thorns must have produced blood. His face must have had bruises from being hit. He must have had blood all from in the middle of his body, his upper body, from the 39 lashes. The crucifixion consisted of putting the spike between the two bones in the wrist because that was enough to support the weight, and the same in the ankles. His side was pierced. Brethren, this is a sight that would be horrible to look upon. Maybe that's why his close friends did not come. But whatever the case is, there were a few that came out of the closet. This morning, the lesson is simple. The lesson is very simple. Out of a group this size, we must admit that there's some here that have closets in their life. There's times when you go somewhere or you go wherever and amongst a certain friends, and it's then that you stop being the Christian and you enter into a spiritual closet and allow yourself to live for self and for the world and for Satan. This morning, step out of your spiritual closet. There's no place in the kingdom of heaven to ever hide and to say, I'm not a Christian. But we must always be willing to stand up for Jesus. This morning, how is your spiritual life? If you can look at Nicodemus and Joseph, and you can sympathize with them a little bit because you know that that's your weakness. That's okay in a sense because we all have our weaknesses. The problem is if we remain in that condition. This morning is the time to correct that condition. This morning is the time to say, Lord, forgive me for being private with my Christian life and strengthen me and I'm starting again. If you need to pray for forgiveness and you need to have forgiveness for the church and for the Lord, come forward. If you're not a child of God, there is no way without being a Christian to stand up for Jesus. There's no way.